Listen, there has never been a better time to invest in self-storage, and there is no better team than ours to show you how to do it, because we wrote the book on how to invest in self-storage. Literally, I created the best-selling home study system back in 2007 titled How to Find, Evaluate, Purchase, and Manage Self-Storage Facilities. And since then, we have helped thousands of people launch and scale their self-storage business and have now become the nation's go-to resource for all things self-storage. And that's because we not only talk the talk, we walk the walk day in and day out since 2005 through now two recessions and amassing a 2.5 million square feet of self-storage, totaling over 15,000 doors nationwide. There is nobody else that has more experience in self-storage that is teaching people how to invest in self-storage than our team. So if you're ready to launch and scale your self-storage business, then go to selfstorageinvesting.com, click on the events tab to grab your ticket to the upcoming Self-Storage Academy, along with tickets to our virtual academy for those who can't make it or just aren't ready to go live at this time. So that, again, is selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the event tab, but do it now as seating is limited. So go do it now. And on behalf of my team, we look forward to seeing you then. Take care.
This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and over the past 16 years, we have acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of my incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and this week's guest is Catherine East. Catherine is our asset manager and oversees our entire portfolio, where her primary role is to drive the NOI, the net operating income of each asset we have under management. Her background is in both business and self-storage consulting, self-storage valuation, underwriting, operations, and overall property management. She also oversees the underwriting arm of our education company and provides group coaching and one-on-one mentoring to our students and existing clients at the Self-Storage Academy. Catherine also heads up our transition team when we take over a facility, where she implements the management system as it relates to that particular property. She is a high-capacity A player that accomplishes more in one day than most people I know and always has a definitive and immediate solution to any challenge we face on the management and operations side of the house. So without further ado, please enjoy my wide-ranging conversation with our asset manager and rockstar coach and mentor for the Self-Storage Academy, Ms. Catherine East. Hello, Catherine, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here, especially since I already now know what our topic is going to be.
Catherine is our asset manager, as we mentioned in the intro. However, when she receives a phone call from me or a Zoom call, she never knows which direction we're going to head or what it is that we're going to be chatting about. And that's because the role of the asset manager changes literally daily. Catherine does have a set of responsibilities, and she's really in charge for, if I could boil it down to, maximizing the net operating income, the NOI of our facilities, ones that we quasi self-manage, and then others where we have a third-party property management company in place where she is managing the management company. But ultimately, for us, and especially for our private equity partners, her role is to maximize and wring every last dollar out of our facilities to make sure they're running as efficiently as possible. So that's my 30,000-foot view. So Catherine, in your own words, let's talk to Storage Nation a little bit in more detail about your role and what does this look like day in, day out, week in, week out, and perhaps month in, month out, since it varies so much.
It is definitely a full-time position. If you're going to look into being an asset manager, you really want to actually dive into what asset managers do. But more specifically, if we're going to drill it down, I'm looking at the bottom line and working my way back to what could be an indicator that we need to adjust things. So I look at the bottom line, which is the NOI, to see where we need to be based on where we should be. So of course, we plan budgeting, and we have key performance indicators that we have to work with. So I'm looking at the NOI and stepping back. So if I had to say it from that perspective, from expenses to raising rates at facilities, that's a big thing twice a year if you can get it done, usually hottest time of the year and coldest time of the year. But individually on each facility, it's a lot to look into. So we're definitely trying our very best to monitor each facility very carefully for those performance indicators that we have to track every month, all the way down to the electric, Scott. So if that's not a 30,000 foot view, that's the 500 foot view when you're looking at the electric bill every month to make sure that it's not adjusting in an unfavorable way, because that is a controllable expense. Does that make sense?
Yep. Makes a complete on this end. And folks, for those of you that are starting out in the business, you may not have the benefit of having somebody like a Catherine Eastham, who is an asset manager who works primarily for us, that is really tasked with taking our strategy and then executing on it. I'm making sure it happens. And so I have a little bit of oversight, but mostly casting the vision and making sure that the numbers make sense, but to be able to carry out. But we bring Catherine in the very beginning as well. So it's not us just setting out and placing upon Catherine an impossible task to say, here, meet these goals, meet these KPIs and these return metrics or else. She's very involved in the underwriting of our facilities and integrated into the process of planning and budgeting and forecasting because she ultimately is the person who's in charge of that. So we have that benefit, but maybe let's take a step back, Catherine, for somebody who maybe doesn't have the opportunity to do that. What would you suggest and how's the best way of going forward to make sure that their I's are dotted, their T's are crossed, and that the plan that they maybe have in their own mind gets a second set of eyes on it to make sure that it's actually realistic?
Of course. Well, we can certainly start by educating ourselves through the underwriting process. That's even before you purchase a facility, to better understand the market, what kind of trends are in that market before you even purchase. That's where you're really going to need to start to make sure that you have a clear understanding of what's happening on that property before you even purchase. Then once you get into your due diligence, of course, there's any number of items that need to be checked off of a box or have their box checked off to be sure that you're able to perform in the manner in which you say you're going to. And then once you've gotten it under contract and you're about to purchase, that's where the real magic starts to happen, because that's when your operations plans start coming into effect. And as an asset manager, there's nothing more important to us than that operations and how this facility is actually going to run. What course is it going to take? How long is it going to take to get there? So as that manager, we have to nail down a timeline for that, and it has to be realistic to the game. So educating yourself through each step is number one. So if you don't have an asset manager like me who comes in and says, okay, this is what we're looking at, here's where we can take it in this timeline, educate yourself. Make sure that you're looking at everything that you possibly can. If I can say anything about what will drive your NOI faster and farther, is being able to understand the market trends. And of course, as you know, Scott, I use several resources in order to track these trends to make sure that any facility that we're looking to purchase or even that we're in right now is making those marks, hitting those key performance indicators. So education.
Let's take a little deeper dive into the market analysis. As we tell folks who have come through our academy or who we're mentoring, we talk about the fact that you could find what appears to be a fantastic deal. And in our words, it's an opportunity until we determine that it's a deal. And it involves two pieces of analysis. And one is the actual physical aspects of the facility itself and where it currently sits. And so, is it in good shape? Does it need a lot of capital expenditures? Are we going to have to spend more money when we buy it? But then let's look at where it's performing now. If the rates are low compared to the rest of the market and the occupancy is low, we can see areas in which we can improve the performance without adding any additional square footage or anything else. That's the first thing that we look at. But I think oftentimes folks could look at a facility that is sitting at 70% occupancy and the rates are 15 to 20% below the rest of the market and say, this is a no-brainer at this price if I'm buying it based upon the NOI in place, until they look into the market and recognize that the competitors are all at 70% occupancy and that really there's only one person that has a higher rate structure we were comparing to think that we could get up to, but all to find out that really this facility is stabilized and there's not a lot of room for growth. So let's do just a little deeper dive into the market analysis. You talked about some of the third-party reports that you use and that we look at as well. What does that process look like to make sure that we are dotting our I's and crossing our T's as it pertains to the market analysis?
Absolutely. Especially since I do a ton of underwriting with the coaching side, the teaching side, and of course my asset management position and partner in other facilities, I have a lot of underwriting responsibilities. And so the types of resources that I'm using are, because I'm a numbers girl, the first thing I look at is the three key performance indicators for it to work. So my DSCRs first. So does it financially make sense? Period. As it's running right now at the price I'm going to pay, can I make this work? Then I'll go into the market and say, well, how far, what kind of add value, like you just said, can I do to this facility? So I have to go into that market and do a deep dive. StoreTrack Explorer is a great asset to any person who's looking in markets. The supply index is close, really, to what's on there, and they have developments, and they also list facilities that are for sale, and I've come across several markets where I'm looking for someone else for a property, and I click on it, and I'll be darned, there's other facilities for sale in the market. So that's awesome. So I love that type of resource. But that's not going to tell me everything, because as you and I both know, there's certain markets where supply index is not even a factor. Like Florida, that the whole state's not even a factor for a supply index at this point. So I love that. But then I have to start looking at what's going on financially in that market. Are we seeing increases in the housing values? What are we seeing in growth, positive growth, not just for population, but for increased income into the median families? What's the poverty rate that has to be, that's being driven by that market? These things are huge indicators of what a market will sustain at the rates that it's at. So that's huge, huge. I like city data for that. So I go to city-data.com, and also World Population Review. That's another one, but more specifically because it has graphs, which are easier to read than going through 80 PowerPoints of information. So I like to look at those and just see how the actual market's trending as far as population goes. Because we have seen a significant shift with the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen people moving to places that we never would have seen people moving to before. So it's been a blessing and a curse, both together. So, but yeah, and those are really the key resources that I'll use to look at a market. And all of them will give you significant reports to any information that you really need, including the crime rates in markets. So, and that's a huge thing for me. I like to know how much security I have to have, because that affects my CapEx. So do I have to have an $8,000 security camera system, or am I having to go $28,000 because I've got to put an entrance and exit gate as well? So what is it that I'm going to need at this facility to make my customers feel safe so that I can charge the rates in that market that make us the leader without being a REIT?
Fair enough. And I want to go back to executing the plan. I'm the hunter. I am not the farmer. That's why I have hired Catherine. I know about management. I know what it takes to drive the needle. I just don't want to be the one to oversee it or actually do it. And so that is where Catherine, where she factors into our organization. But then below her, I view her as my lieutenant, overseeing the assets. And then below her, she's got an army of folks that are now carrying out those orders down below. And so that means at the property level, the property management companies who are, we oversee, if you will, and we set those budgets and plans alongside of them, but then other facilities in which we manage ourselves in a quasi-management relationship. But ultimately, Catherine is in charge of setting forth the vision to them. So the key to that is striking the right balance between a person that we can afford at this facility, because self-storage, in terms of the revenue and the percentage that is allocated to management, it's difficult to get the people that we would like to have on site. Those are that are going to drive the value of our investment, our $500,000, $1 million, $3 million investment. And so getting the right people and the right seat on the bus is an ongoing, I don't even want to say it's a challenge, you might, Catherine, but it's just part of the business. At this point, we don't really view it as a challenge. We just say accept that. So let's talk a bit about that piece, about finding the right folks to sit behind that desk and then to stand up and greet that person and guide them through the process, and also being responsible and taking that, truly that ownership mentality at our sites, rather than being somebody who just watches the clock. Talk to the folks a little bit about how you go about finding those people.
Absolutely. And I will say, yes, finding quality, self-performing, self-driven people has been a challenge for many, many, many years. So at this point, we don't even call it a challenge. It's something that we work with, and we will hire and fire until we find the right person. And that may not sound great to some listeners, but you have to understand that at the end of the day, it's a business regardless. So I don't need an order taker. I need a lieutenant like me at my facilities. So I'm specifically looking for people who I can see right off the bat are just very driven. Sometimes I go through a McDonald's drive-thru and we'll see someone who's just wonderfully pleasant, and I'll ask them if they're looking for a career. Sounds corny, but it's happened. Gas stations, great places to find quality employees, just so you know. Doesn't even have to, like, if you're in the Midwest, everybody knows about Quick Trip. Quick Trip is amazing. Those workers are impressive. Same thing with a Buc-ee's, with a Love's. I mean, that's where it's at. Also Lowe's and Home Depot. I like those people. They're very hard workers. I used to go to churches. I have found that with COVID, obviously, that's kind of not as fluent as it used to be. But usually you can also find one of your tenants to do it. in the rare event that you do have a situation where you have an emergency, there's always one tenant who's just willing to do whatever you need them to do. They call you, they're, "Hi, Miss Catherine, I just want you to know I was down at the property today and it looks like unit number 5 moved out." It's that person. So they may not be technologically savvy, but they're pleasant. They're good with people and they look out for your property. That's how I like to start that. I can't train personality, but you can always train them how to work on a smartphone and take a payment. You can always train them how to rent a unit, but you can't teach personality. And those are the kind of people that I like look for. And that's where I look for them at. I pluck them from the big guys.
We absolutely reverse engineer not only what the REITs are doing in our own industry, but also what other strong companies are doing it with regards to having a strong management and training program, so that there are plenty of folks out there that are looking for another opportunity where they can work with, maybe going back to a smaller organization where they have a little more control and a little more say, and then also to be a part of something rather than just working for basically a nameless, faceless organization. And we have found that as well. And funny you say that, or maybe ironic, that two of our, probably our best managers that we had early on in our career, both come from gas stations and got extremely well and had long tenure. So 100%. Now, that's not always the case. And as we've grown and the size of our assets gets a little bit larger, the skill set that we're looking for is much greater. But to your point, Catherine, and especially for those that are starting out, if you're looking for a good person to mind the store while you're out going out and finding out the next facility, that is absolutely a great place to look. Let's shift gears a little bit, Catherine. And I'd like to talk, I mean, everybody loves to talk about how to make money, but what people want to talk more about usually is some of the nightmares, the pitfalls, and mistakes. So speak a little bit to maybe some of the challenges. I mean, we walk into, I mean, the reason why we're buying these value add facilities and the reason why they're value add is because they've had typically an owner who has taken their eyes off the facility. They've taken their hands off the wheel. They may have hired a friend or a relative that needed a job to drive the performance of their facility, only to find that they were just clocking hours and trading hours for dollars. So talk a little bit about what you typically find in our, if there is such a thing, typical value add facility right out of the gate that some folks are going to run into, and quite honestly, what to look for to create value.
Of course. So this actually is great because I literally was driving through Florida going from Pensacola to Apalachicola. And I went through this very, what looked like a small big town. And I know everybody knows what that looks like. It's where things are a little bit more spread out, but you can tell that it's a city for the area that it's in. And we're driving by these facilities. There's three of them on the left-hand side of a 4-lane. And I look over and I can just see that they're the type of facility that I absolutely want. So I literally stopped, got their phone numbers, and now I know who the owners are. And the reason that I did that was because they are a little worn, yes, but more importantly, I could see that the managers are living on site and that they were not taking care of the property. That literally tells me right there that this is an add value property, hands down. I can automatically increase the value of this property tenfold. So what I'm looking for as far as some of the add values is more of the C-class facilities that other people are like, well, it's rough around the edges, but you know what? There's nothing that isn't great that wasn't rough around the edges before you polished it, period. So absolutely love that. On the other side of that, Scott, if we want to talk about mistakes, I know you're aware that I test my theories on my own properties before I send them out into the Scott Myers world. Because I mean, it has to be tested. You can't just start applying 22% rate increases your first year without testing it somewhere in a very sensitive market. And so, I mean, I can tell you, I have made so many mistakes testing out theories, but I worry about if I ever even consider those a mistake because I learned so much. So, and really, what's a mistake if it's not just learning on the back end?
100%. And that, I want to piggyback on that, Catherine, and that, again, when folks are starting out, you may not have the luxury and the ability to test things out or have somebody test it out before that you implement it in your own facility. But rates being one of them that we talk about a lot. I think this is one of the reasons why we take over facilities and there is an opportunity to create value, which we touched on earlier. And that is the fact that in some of these smaller areas and markets, secondary and tertiary markets, the competitors, all the folks that are in that town, the owners of self-storage facilities, there's a big race to the bottom and they all are trying to undercut themselves. And if you're coming in to create value and you happen to purchase one of those facilities, your goal, you don't wait around for a REIT to come in and then raise rates and you stay $4, $5, $7 below them to be able to get that business or the scraps. You need to be comfortable in being the market leader. You're not going to be a REIT, but you can be the market leader and you can have the nicest facility in the market because it's well taken care of. You clean it up and the curb appeal is fantastic. And there is security, the amenities, and it doesn't take much to do that. And then you become the price leader. And then you communicate to the rest of your friendly competitors that this is what you plan to do. And hopefully they will follow suit as well. So my point is, don't be afraid or feel as if you can't be the market leader when you come into a market, even if you're new in the industry. What would you add to that, Catherine?
Well, I absolutely love what you just said, that don't be afraid, because that's where we find a lot of markets where we can add value. And one of the hardest things for me is when we do go into a market and I can see that it's a mom and pop and they poured their heart and soul into it. They just unfortunately haven't created the atmosphere of knowing it's a business. So don't be afraid to run your business like a business. That's what I want to add to that, because I don't want people to go out there and make the mistakes that have already been made. And we can already say that that doesn't work. Don't do that in a market that's like that, because here's what will happen. So just make sure that you're relying on your mentors and your coaches and just get some feedback and make sure that you understand your markets and how they're driven so that you don't have to worry about bad things happening, especially on the management side, which can be very scary, as we all know. We've seen all different kinds of managers, from theft to all kinds of crazy stuff, homeless people living on properties. Do we see it all the time? No, we don't. But when we do, it's easy to understand why the facility wasn't performing where it should have been.
For sure. Well, Kath, we're all about the numbers, as we talked about on the front end, and then also carrying out that plan. And so we have to have a dashboard to understand if we're hitting our marks and are we obtaining the goals that we put in place, our KPIs. Share a little bit about what you look at in a facility to determine its overall health and if it's operating well. What are some of those baselines, those metrics that you're looking at and looking for as you meet with a manager on site or meeting with the management companies to gauge whether this thing, if this facility is operating at its best? Richie, edit point. I'm gonna start that again. So carrying out this plan is key, Catherine, and the only way of knowing if we're able to carry this out and if we're actually achieving our goals and our objectives is through a dashboard and our key performance indicators, or KPIs, as we call them around here. Share, if you will, some of those KPIs that you're looking at on, say, a weekly or a monthly basis to understand the overall health of a facility.
Absolutely. So the very first one that I'm looking at is occupancy history. I want to see, from the day that we took over, the day we purchased, the day we opened, where we started from to where we are today. I want to make sure that we're overall increasing month over month, because what's the goal? To get to 85% or better so that we can show in that market where we can add another second layer of additional value by expanding. That's where our head's at, because that's where the NOI is. That's where that money's at. So I'm always looking at the occupancy. The next thing that I'm looking at is the income in general. So I'm doing the rents, because of course, if we're 90% full in one specific size unit, I need to be looking at raising the rents on those specific units so that each month my rent can increase. Now I say each month, but like I said, we really only do those raises twice a year. And that's so that we don't shell shock customers, because that's awful when you do that to them. It's good to get your rate increases in. We are seeing 5 to 10% per year across the board, where we used to see 3. So I'm looking for that. I'm also looking to see what our fees and collections look like. So the fees, late fees, I want to see how much we're collecting there, along with administration fees. I have a facility that's on the lower end of occupancy. I want to see administration fees coming through. I've got 20 move-ins. I better have $400 in income sitting there, right? Makes sense. So the collections is another big one for me. I need to see less than 5% delinquency, period. That's overall. Anybody who's over 7 days or 10 days, depending on your state, late, I want to see less than 5% of my facility at that level. Managers have to work super hard to get this, especially in our bigger facilities, because bigger facilities, more customers to call each month to make sure that they're getting their payments and on time. So that's the income side. If it has a U-Haul, I am looking at U-Haul income because I need to know. I mean, I like U-Haul just for the marketing push that it can do if your property can sustain it, for sure. But I'm looking at it for more from the perspective of how many trucks do we have versus the income level that we're bringing in? Because I don't know if a lot of owners know, but you can get a percentage of the rentals that you just reserve at your property. So like our Kalamazoo property, Jessica, the manager, she reserves trucks for people at other locations, and then we get 10% of that right off the bat. So we may not have a lot of cycling trucks, which is good for us because we don't have to clean them and do all the mess. And we're also getting a commission for leasing at other properties. So that's awesome. That's where I'm looking at for those retail sales. Absolutely. If it's a property that actually has a retail office, as you all have probably heard about this whole new situation of unmanned properties. And I just, so you know, I did air quotes because you can't really have an unmanned property. So I am looking at retail because I need to make sure that the manager has more objectives than just this is where the rent needs to be. I need them to understand that even though I do need you to grow in the rent, I also need you to grow in your tenant insurance and your retail sales, especially if you're just sitting there. Those are two big things for me. On the expenses side, what am I not tracking? That's an easier question because advertising and marketing can be one of your largest expenses. So I need to make sure that we're within the budget that we set. If we don't have a budget, which sometimes on these smaller facilities, you don't really have a budget at all. You have $250 that you could spend. So you have to be very careful and you have to understand where that money's going. On the bigger side, third-party management companies, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of your properties are ran by third-party management companies. So watching those types of expenses are going to be key to understanding where your third-party management company is at. So for those of you who hire, let's say, like Absolute Management or even a smaller company like Gary Edmonds' company or Pseudo, what I do, you need to still be watching that very carefully because they have a set amount that they can spend per year in their own contract. So those are the main key performance indicators that I'm looking at. And that's monthly. So monthly, I'm looking at all these. And then quarterly, I'm looking a little bit closer into those P&Ls because I need to see if our taxes have come out yet and where they went to. Property taxes, that's a big one. In some cases, when you purchase a facility, it could be right away that they do their assessment, or it could be 3 years. And we also need to know that because we need to see when that hits so we know what type of increase that municipality has provided for us. And I say that with all niceness because I know you got to pay taxes. Only two things are certain in this life, right, Scott?
That is correct. We know all too well what occurs more frequently that reminds us of that, and that is taxes. So thank you for that, Catherine. That is absolutely, and you are correct. What don't we track in expenses? We are relentless in driving our expenses down at all costs and making sure that we are boosting our NOI because of the power of the cap rate, and as well as then keeping an eye on the market and rate management, revenue management, in addition to driving occupancy. So this business is not, as they say, it's not rocket science. It is not a difficult business. It is a somewhat simple, predictable business model, but it's not easy. And there are many, many facets to it where people fall in a trap where people fail to reach their goals in creating value is they just simply take their hands off the wheel. And they're not minding the store, and they're not walking the four corners of their business and treating it more as a hobby. And so, again, folks, whether you're at the place where you can work with someone like a Catherine East as an asset manager for us, or can at least work with somebody on a part-time basis to come in and do a tune-up and audit to tweak some of the processes and make sure you get up to speed, or whether this is something you're doing on your own, then go back and listen to this and make sure you are taking notes on all of the ways that you can affect the performance of your facility. Because when it comes time to sell or to refinance, when the bank is looking at 12 months worth of numbers, you can't create that value in 1 month or in 2 weeks just because you've decided now it's time to sell or to refinance. This is the sense of urgency you need to have is daily, is monthly, to continue to drive the performance of your facility. So with that, Catherine, I want to thank you so much for your time. We appreciate all that you do for us and taking time out once again. We would love to have had Catherine in the studio or a quieter location, but she never is. She's always out in the field. And so I am just thankful that you took time out to share that with our folks on Storage Nation, what it is that an asset manager does, how to drive performance, and how you do what you do. So with that, any parting words of wisdom for folks as we head into the balance of this year, or from what you're seeing out in the marketplace literally right now?
Absolutely. Don't pay attention to cap rates.
Well said. And there seems to be a theme here, Catherine. And so as we listen to our series, when we go through with the rest of your cohorts within our organization, we have had that conversation several times, and I didn't prompt anyone. Cap rates are a misnomer right now. And so we'll just go ahead and state that again and agree 100%. Catherine, appreciate you. Appreciate your time. And I'm looking forward to seeing you very soon.
I appreciate you also, Scott. See you very soon.
Catherine. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Hey, gang, wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the follow and subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.